Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Siamo. Chi c'era qui alla DeepCon precedente con Peter? Pochi. Vabbè, allora siamo contentissimi di averlo di nuovo con noi, perché vi renderete conto che, oltre ad essere un ottimo attore, è anche una persona estremamente colta, simpatica, intelligente, oltre che un bell'uomo, ovviamente. Quindi volevo, appunto, vi presento, in occasione del ventennale di Stargate, abbiamo con noi il cattivo per eccellenza, Peter William Sapofis. Do you remember her? She gave you the massage. Quando vuoi.
Ciao a tutti.
Peter, you want to stand? You want to stand? Yeah, sure. Okay.
I have to tell you a little story. First. Since it's 15 years since I was last at DeepCon, and it is 15 years, I think we figured it out. I was at DeepCon 3 15 years ago. That means we're all getting old. And I can prove it. Well, no, not Andrea. It's Andrea, right? Yes. I certainly am getting old. I have to tell you this before Natalie gets downstairs. You saw that I came with a partner this time. That is Natalie. We've been together for over 10 years. It's a beautiful story. She used to be my girlfriend in 1984, but we both married other people. And after divorce, we got reunited. It's a beautiful story, but that's not the story I have to tell you. I have to tell you, and I hope you understand me, I'm getting old. I was tired this afternoon, and in order to refresh myself to come and talk to you, I went and I washed my face, but I forgot to take my glasses off. That is the mark of age.
Oh, you're still very fit and handsome.
Well, thank you. Fit, handsome, and intelligent. I told you three times, three words.
When I introduced you, I just said that you're very witty, intelligent, educated.
Okay, so you did say it. All right, I let you off. For those of you that didn't understand me, would you please just
tell
us?
I don't think that anybody needs to. Guarda, t'ammazzo oggi. Qualcuno serve la traduzione? Ok, perfetto. You know, we improved too, and so now they all speak English.
Yes. Is that Roberta? Roberta? No? No. Is Roberta here?
No.
No? Tomorrow. Okay. Because she posted some nice pictures of me in front
Roberta,
of the Stargate.
Yes. No, she will come tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. I saw people put up their hands. I think the way we're going to approach this is for me to just say, you have any questions that you've been wanting to ask me for 15 years?
No, I think that many people weren't there the first time you came. So maybe...
Who has met me before? Who has met me before? Only three. Oh, so most of you are meeting me for the first time?
Yeah.
Ah. Va bene. So start at the beginning. In the beginning, there was Apophis, but one God. Then came Sokar and Baal and Nirti and Hathor and all the others. But we don't count them. Not today. It's all about Apophis. Let me see. What can I tell you? I guess I can tell all my old jokes.
Yes, no.
Because nobody's heard them.
First of all, how did you, well, why you became an actor and why?
All right, I'll start at the very beginning. I am from Jamaica. Who knew Apophis was Jamaican? I lived in England for a long time. And while I was there, I did university in England. While I was there was the first time I came to Italy. I fell in love with a beautiful girl from Sardinia. And I spent some time in Noro and in Ginevra in Switzerland and in England. And I did not know I wanted to be an actor at that time. I have a geography degree it's a joint degree, geography and archaeologia. So it's another reason I'm very attracted to Chocharia. Right? And I love coming to Italy. But I didn't know I wanted to be an actor until I finally moved to Canada, where I did a play, and I enjoyed it very much. It was a very serious play. Some of you may know it as a film that starred Richard Dreyfuss, Whose Life Is It Anyway? About someone who was a quadriplegic. Capito?
Quadriplegic.
Yeah. And I played a hospital orderly, so who was the light relief, the humor, the funny side. So I, every time I spoke, people laughed. And it was amateur theater, so I made no money. We played to a full house. Because Margaret Trudeau, the mother of our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, said it was her favorite play. So, and she had an article in a magazine that said it was her favorite place. So it was very popular. We played to full houses. And every time I opened my mouth, everybody laughed. Now, that's the easiest way to get hooked on an acting job. So when you say something, people react. That's you get the feedback. And I was hooked. So I moved to Toronto and tried to become an actor. What I really became was a waiter. Because there's a joke. So you're an actor. What restaurant do you work at? That was me for a couple of years. But eventually I got some success in commercials. And then I was able to join the Actors Union. And once I was in the union, I thought I better take some acting classes. So I took some acting classes. I did some improv comedy. And I landed my very first speaking role in an American show, which was a two-part. They called it a miniseries, even though there were only two parts. And it was called Hoover versus the Kennedys, the Second Civil War. And I played a young Harry Belafonte, I had eight lines. And yeah, you can see it. People tell me I look like Shari Belafonte, Harry's daughter, which I take as a compliment because she's a very attractive girl. Anyway, so I got a few jobs here and there, and I got married and moved to Vancouver. Vancouver is where Stargate wound up being shot. And one day I get a call from my agent saying, come in and read for Stargate. Actually, I'm cutting out a couple of chapters because if I tell you everything, we'll be here all night. Okay, I'll tell you one thing. Brad Wright, who produced the series Stargate, was a writer on another show that I did in Vancouver, a Canadian show called Neon Rider. It was his very first writing job. And we have LaVie here. He's a writer. He likes to hear those things about writers. Anyway, I get called for my audition for Stargate, and they tell me they want to read for this character. A character called Tilk. That was my first audition for Stargate, for the role of Tilk. When I saw who they finally cast as Tilk, I understand why I didn't get that job. Yes, exactly. Very, very big man, Christopher Judge. But they called me back and they said, okay, we want you to read for this character called Apophis. And I did not know, I didn't realize that Apophis was essentially Ra from the movie. But I'm there doing my audition, and Michael Greenberg, who was one of the producers at Showtime, the American station that had commissioned Stargate for four pre-sold seasons. Capito? See? Four pre-sold seasons. So we had a lot of money to shoot Stargate. And Michael Greenberg stopped my audition and he went, Apophis. I had dreadlocks at the time. So there were, I had long hair, like Jay Davidson, who played Ra in the movie. Plus, I'm a brown-skinned man with fine features, just like Jay Davidson, who played Ra in the movies. So that dawned on him in the middle of my audition, and he stopped my audition and said, Apophis. So I went away thinking, oh, great, I did very well. I'm going to get a job. 2 weeks go by, nothing. Two more weeks go by, nothing. Christmas, New Year's, everything passed, and I completely forgot about it until finally I got the call, you're going to play Apophis. Who's Apophis? What is Apophis? I don't know. What is an Apophis? So I show up, and they start measuring me head to toe for these fantastic costumes. At that point, I realized that this was going to be something big. When I finally saw the script, and I saw Apophis's first entrance, I knew it was even bigger than big. And I thought I was very, very pleased to see what it wound up as. And about those costumes, by the way, the costume designer, who is no longer with us, and I forget her name at this moment. I'll remember it as we go along. Wrote in a Stargate book that it was her favorite character to design for. And I was very, Christina McQuarrie. She was the costume designer, Emmy Award winning too. And I was very fortunate to wear those costumes. And I say those costumes because for those of you that don't know, I had several of the fanciest costumes. What else? Let's see, where can I go from there? So Stargate, I wasn't in every episode, so I'm not a millionaire like Christopher and Michael and Amanda, but I tended to come around in the big episodes, the season openers, the double episodes, the season enders, and the episodes that were scheduled to show during ratings week. You know, ratings week, where they rank the shows and how well they've done. So it was very high visibility. And the face of the show was Richard Dean Anderson, but right after that was the snake head costume that I used to wear. So I got a lot of attention from that, and that's when things started to go really, really well for me. And I started to travel the world to go to conventions. That was also very cool. And it's funny, Tilk had a role in that too. The very first convention I ever did was a convention in Sydney, Australia, that he was due to go to and had to pull out for one reason or another. And I was picked as the replacement. Yeah, thank you. So ever since then, conventions have been part of my life. And Fuji, the first time round, was one of the earlier conventions I ever did. And thanks to Flora.
No, thanks to you. And Peter, was it difficult to wear the costumes and the makeup and everything, or not?
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I put that makeup on, it took them a couple of hours to apply. I think they were winging it as they went. And actors don't usually mind a couple of hours in the makeup chair, because that means a little bit of extra overtime at the end of the day. It takes a long time to put the makeup on, it takes a long time to take it off, and you get paid a lot more. You get into double time and triple time. So I wasn't complaining. And the costumes themselves were there were a lot of pieces to the costume. My costume in particular was a short skirt, ballet shoes, all painted gold. I see LaVie smiling. I had this fake chainmail. And of course, I was wearing long underwear because half the time it's cold, and chainmail is cold. And the skirt was made out of leather. The body tunics were this itchy kind of raffia type material that was very itchy. And I needed help. I needed assistance to get in and out of this thing. There was a guy there who was only too happy to dress me and undress me. And it was his job. But the helmet was the real thing. The helmet weighed 60 pounds each. There were two helmets. One that had mechanics inside that opened and closed. And the other one was made out of rubber, and it was permanently closed. Both of them weighed about 60 pounds. The opening and closing one was controlled by hydraulics. Nowadays, they'd probably have a button, and it would be electronic or Bluetooth or something. But back in those days, it was hydraulic. So there was always a guy stuck behind my ass with a plunger, so that the minute I said Jaffa Cree, he would, and the thing would shut. You know, I had just enough room inside that helmet so that if the back of my head was touching the inside of the helmet, I knew that my nose was safe. Because if I delivered the line and I was leaning forward, it would hit my nose. So I had to, if you watch those things again, you can catch an imperceptible Jaffa Cree. Right? That's one of the little things I notice when I watch it again. Yeah, but the costumes were so recognizable and so much fun. I like to say they did half my work for me.
Qualcuno ha qualche
io, bravo. Peter, just a question. After 15 years, which is the legacy of the first DeepCon? I mean, you did a lot of convention. One of the first was the DeepCon. What about the other? The difference between the DeepCon, the first DeepCon you did, and the other, the convention?
Oh, well, I learned early on that this was not your average convention. And this time I have learned there is an appropriate phrase for it. This is DeepCon, the unconventional convention. Which I think is brilliant, and it really is true. It's not because I'm standing here. I have to hope that you believe me and know that I'm sincere when I tell you that even before I met any of you, I loved Italy. So to come here at any time is a privilege for me. And I'll tell you all the reasons I love Italy. It's not just because of Roberto Baggio or Schillaci or some of my favorite footballers of all time. Del Piero, okay. I like Pirlo. I like Andrea Pirlo. I like a lot of footballers, but of course, Amore. And Juventus. And Juventus. Okay? And Juve.
No good.
And
no
Roma. And Lazio. E Cagliari. Cagliari. Okay? Yes, anyway, so when I came to DeepCon the first time, of course, it's a small convention. I was blown away by this hotel and the food. And I'll never forget, there was something I ate, I can't even remember what it was now, but I loved it so much, I asked Flora to go in the kitchen and get the chef to come out and tell me the recipe. I wrote it down. I believe it was some kind of, it was a local pasta. It kind of looked like a spirale, but it's not a spirale. It was a more dense pasta. It looked like a...
Strozzabredi, forse.
Looks like a little dumpling.
Fusilli.
No, it wasn't fusilli. It was, the fusilli. Ah, yes, see, fusilli. Yes. It's like a little missile, a little dumpling. And the sauce was, you know what he taught me? Cognac. A little cognac in the sauce. You heat the olive oil, you saute your onions, and you throw a little cognac in and let the alcohol burn off. It just leaves the aroma in the pan, and then you put in a little bit of sliced salami, which, by the way, I took some salami back from Fuji to Canada, and I didn't declare it. You're not allowed to. So I got it home, and I didn't even think about it. I then a few years ago, I went to Barcelona, and they have some very nice smoked meats over there too. And I bought some and took them home, and I thought it was okay. So when I went through immigration and customs, they said, anything to declare? And I said, yes, I just brought back some sausages from and they, you know, they go, that way, please, sir. And they took it away and threw it in the garbage. And I begged. I got down on one knee and I said, please, please. And you know what the officer said to me? She said, you see that? I couldn't if I wanted to. She was pointing to the cameras. I would. And then she said, it's a good thing you told us you had it. And then she just waved me out. But what she didn't know was I was traveling with my daughter, and I had the cheap stuff. My daughter had the expensive stuff. So we made it through anyway. I really enjoyed, I'm not answering your question, am I? I really enjoyed the convention last time. I'm enjoying this one. How does it compare? This one is far more simpatico, tactile. Tactilo? No, I mean,
a tactile.
You meet hands on. Yes. Who said that? Good for you. Yes, it's more, you have more connection with the people. And I find also, and I mean no disrespect for those of you that go to other conventions, but the people here are more intelligent. They're more well read. You can get into good conversations. You can get into very good conversations with people. Look, you have authors here, and I love the way this word sounds. Fantascienza. Fantascienza. You don't call it science fiction. You call it fantascienza, and I just love that. I tell that to other people too, when I'm out in the real world. No, this convention has a special feel to it. It will always be dear to me. And, you know, I looked on for 15 years as other people came to this convention. I know you only have a limited amount of actors. And even this year, I had to arm wrestle to get here. I had to fight David Nickel, who you'll probably see next year. David and I have become very, very good friends, and it would have been really cool if we both could have come at the same time. Actually, you wouldn't have seen us. We would have probably just rented a car and taken off. But we've become very good friends. We met at a convention in New Zealand, and I visit him in Vancouver, and he lets me stay at his place, and I eat with his family, and we have a lovely time.
And you're not posting on Facebook the photos you're taking here?
I have posted a few, and I'm already in his... he's already swearing at me. He made me promise not to, but I can't resist. So I'll have to deal with that when I get home. We have Omar. And I'm getting to know people's names. You got Giampi.
Peter, prima.
Yes, Omar.
Prima hai accennato ai tuoi colleghi d'avventura durante Stargate. Con quale di tutti hai legato di più?
I got along very well with Sharae. let me answer honestly. Christopher Judge was probably the closest one to me. Here's a funny story, though. He says he met me many years before Stargate, and I don't remember. And I don't know how that's possible. Because Chris is a very, very memorable person. He's always teasing me that I don't remember. I'm a snob because I don't remember him. And I swear he's mistaken, but, you know. Christopher is one of the kindest men I know. He made a lot of money on Stargate, and we would go around to conventions, and I will never forget one in particular in Texas, where he took me out night to a nightclub with him. Now, Christopher is a very big party guy. He drinks scotch. He likes a lot of attention, if you know what I mean. So Christopher paid, this club was one that all the basketball stars used to go to and the sports stars. It's not the kind of place I would have found myself in, but because Christopher was going, and he knows some of those people, he'll pull out a couple $100 to get into the club and tip people to bring us drinks all night and dance for us, that sort of thing. And Christopher, he paid for the whole thing. In return, I took him home when he was drunk and made sure he got to his room. I would hang out in his trailer quite a bit. He liked to watch golf and porn. You've heard that story, no? Yes, golf and porn, or porn and golf. He had a satellite dish on the top of his trailer, and this stuff was beamed into his trailer. Special stuff. Amanda Tapping is a beautiful human being. I knew her from her commercials. She did commercials in Toronto. Richard Dean was not really, really very friendly, to be honest, at the time. He's a lot friendlier now. But there was one time when I ran into him on a beach in Vancouver. Vancouver is famous for beautiful beaches. I was out with my young children at the time and my dog. And he loves his dog. He also loves young children. Once his daughter was born, he changed. He became very much softer, much more approachable. But his daughter was not yet born, but we bonded over dogs. We met each other on the beach, Kitsilano Beach, for anyone who's been to Vancouver, which is a very famous beach. It's beautiful, too. And so there was MacGyver, Colonel O'Neill, talking to Apophis, holding dogs on the beach. And pretty soon we had a crowd of people around us who recognized us. It was one of them. My children were very, very impressed by this. And he stayed there and he talked to me for at least 20 minutes. And I had never before had a 20-minute conversation with Richard Dean Anderson. But offset and with dogs and kids around, he became a puppy dog himself. And I'll never forget that moment. And I told him about it years later. Nowadays, we see each other at conventions. None of us really stay in touch. We see each other at conventions. And the last time I saw Richard Dean Anderson was in Auckland, New Zealand. We went to Hobbiton. You know what Hobbiton is? Yes, we went to Hobbiton in Matamata in the North Island of New Zealand. And this place it's like a fairy tale. It's like walking in a fairy tale. And those sets for Lord of the Rings, it was Lord of the Rings, right? Yeah. Are real. They're real. Those little huts in the earth are real. And the fruit garden, the vegetable garden that the hobbits used to farm in, they're real. So I'm standing in the garden and I'm looking around and I see three or four ripe strawberries, fragoli, right? And I'm looking around to see if anybody's watching me. And I thought it was safe, so I went and I picked one, And I held it in my hand as though nothing had happened. And I ate it, and it was sweet. It was beautiful, really nice. So I'm looking for the others now. I'm looking around. And there's this guy standing next to me. And I think he saw me. So I said, "You see those other strawberries? They're really sweet, really nice." Talking. "And I'm going to get that one and that one. And you can try that one." So I picked the other strawberry and ate it. And I was just about to go for the third one when I looked at the guy. It's Richard Dean Anderson. I was talking to him for 15 minutes, telling him about stealing strawberries from hobbits. And I did not recognize him. Of course, lately, he's gained a lot of weight. He looks different now. He looks different. But it's still him, if you look at him. Anyway, he didn't mind at all. He actually ate the last strawberry, and we talked about it, and we both are in a similar situation. I look after my elderly mother, who is in a wheelchair, and his mother is elderly and requires a lot of attention as well, and we bonded on that. So nowadays, Richard Dean Anderson and I are on very good terms, and we don't communicate. We meet at conventions. But we always say, "How's your mother? You know, how's your mom doing?" And that's a good icebreaker. Some of the other characters I meet too, I have to mention the other Gwawuld, because we go to conventions together now sometimes, you know, Baal, Apophis, Hathor, and Nirti. The four of us go to these conventions and do our little comic act. We're very good together. The four of us, we complement each other really well. And Cliff Simon is a fantastic guy, just an amazing fellow. And so is Suan Braun. Jacqueline Samuda, have to mention her as well. There you go.
Scusa, vuoi fare una domanda? No.
Semplicemente volevo chiedere se durante le riprese sul set vi facevate degli scherzi e quale di quelli ti è rimasto più impresso.
Everybody asks that question. Now, because I was not on set all the time, I don't have a lot of jokes, but there was one. Those of you who watched the whole series may be familiar with the episode Serpent Song, where Apophis, his host, aged to death. So they took me and they put me on a SG-1 captured Apophis, and without his sarcophagus he started to get older and older very quickly before he finally dies. So they put me on a gurney. Right, a hospital gurney in a straight jacket. For you know, straight jacket.
Grazie.
See, and then they strap me onto this thing, three straps. And so Apophis cannot escape. I was in every scene in that episode. Every scene. I had a scene with Michael Shanks, a scene with Richard Dean, a scene with Dr. Fraser, a scene with General Hammond, a scene with everybody. And so I was lying down all day in this straitjacket. I was very tired at the end of the day, and I had a flight to catch to Australia the very next day. Or maybe that very night. Peter DeLuise was the director of that episode. And at the end of my final scene, he goes, "That was a great day's work from Peter Williams. Can we have a round of applause?" That's his rap for the show. clap, 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 clap. Everybody, yay, yay, Peter, yay, Peter. And then, thank you very much. And the lights went off. And everybody, I hear footsteps, everybody walked off set, disappeared, leaving me lying there on the gurney in a straitjacket with a flight to catch. Silence. 5 minutes. 10 minutes. Nothing at all. Guys, hello? Hello? And then the echoes. Hello, hello, hello. Nothing. Till finally somebody somewhere in the room coughed or laughed or something, and I realized that it was a practical joke. Practical joke. And I have to credit Peter DeLuise for that. Because he's, as you know, he's the son of a great comedian, Dom DeLuise. And as they say in English, the apple don't fall far from the tree. Same in Italian.
Yes.
By the way, you don't have to ask me anything about everything about Stargate. You can ask me anything. Just ask me anything. It's that kind of convention.
Well, actually, my question is about this. You did many other things after Stargate, so can you talk about these things? And mostly, did you have the problem of being typecast after Apophis? Because it's a very strong character.
Good question, good question. If I was lucky enough to be typecast as Apophis, I wouldn't mind as an Apophis type, because the main villain is the next best thing to the star. It would be great if I could get it. No, typecasting, it has never been a problem for me, to be honest. I am a hybrid as a person. I'm indeterminate racially and spiritually and, generally. I'm kind of not one thing or another. I don't fit into stereotypes very easily. I'm not a stereotypical Jamaican or African American or Canadian or I think of myself as a world citizen. And I think I come across that way by and large. So whenever they're casting characters according to their essence, I get the call for characters that is described as quirky, unique, that you can't, somebody can't put your finger on. No, didn't get the typecasting thing. But I did get, early in my career, I did play an awful lot of taxi drivers. Some reason. And I play a lot of bad guys, funnily enough. Apophis was a bad guy, but he was kind of an idiot, too. Too arrogant. He was arrogant, very arrogant. I just finished a movie this week where I played a spy, a double agent. So I appeared to be one thing, but I turned out to be another. And I undermine the cause of good. So that's a bad guy. I have played drug dealers. I have played psychologically weak individuals.
And Peter, what about The Expanse? Because we will have The Expanse here in Italy.
Ah, yes. Recently I was fortunate to be in an episode of a new show, relatively new show called The Expanse. The Expanse is, some of you know it, some of you don't, is set 200 years in the future, and human beings have colonized Mars. But Mars is a long way away, so there are a lot of stops in between if you're going to go to Mars. These places have been populated by people from Earth of every race. They have all mixed together and are known as belters, people who live in the beltway to Mars. And they have their own accent, their own, and it seems to be a mixture of a lot of accents that we have here on Earth. When I got the job, I had to sit with a linguist and learn how to pronounce each and every word. Some of the words are, a lot of them have Caribbean inflections, so there's a lot of Jamaican accent in it. There is Cantonese, there is Yiddish, there is a French pronunciations. For instance, if I had to, one of the stars is James Holden, H-O-L-D-E-N. And I had to say Holden, James Holden, like a Chinaman. Or my wife's name was Melissa. You don't pronounce the E, it's Melissa, Melissa. And please is not please, it's police. Police. So every single word in the Belter dialect was predetermined. But don't think if you tune into that show, you're just going to hear that accent. Half the characters are Earthers, so it's Earthers and Belters. I was not a bad guy in that show. I was just a guy. In fact, my character appears in the books. His name was, and if anybody's writing this down, it's a long one. His name was Santichai Suputayaporn. Yes. No, I didn't. I'm just very good at saying long words. Santichai Suputayaporn. And in the books, because it's based on some successful books, in the books, that guy is 80 years old. But, as you know, when things are adapted to the screen, you take liberties, you make changes. So. No, he wasn't a creature, he's a person. A belter. In the books? Oh, you read the book? Okay, so you know what happened to him? Yeah. Shh. Okay. Any more questions? Yeah, Jumpy.
Facciamo l'ultima, o se ce ne sono delle altre, alzate subito per favore, se no facciamo la sessione autografa.
Visto che hai detto che hai appena finito di girare un film, se ci dici anche altri progetti che sta facendo.
Oh, that's the toughest question you can ask an actor. You know that, right? I don't. I just finished Expanse, and I just finished this movie, and now I'm in Fuji, and I'm going home to sleep. I'm going home to rest. But I will tell you, if you find me on Facebook next week and ask me the same question, I could have a different answer. That's how it is in my business. Yeah. And in fact, you know, the minute I get a job, you guys are going to be among the first to know about it, because I'm going to put it on Twitter and I'm going to put it on Facebook. And it'll get retweeted a million times because you're all following me on Twitter, aren't you? Good. Actual Apophis is my handle on Twitter. Actual Apophis. Good. You follow me, right? You do already. Okay. Well, tell all your friends, because I collect Twitter followers.
And to end this first Q&A session, I just wanted to say that when we got in touch for this convention, just to show you how real is Peter loves for Italy, he said, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, give up on this convention unless, and at the same time I was, you know, we were chatting and I was writing the same thing, unless Steven Spielberg calls me, yeah. And I was writing, unless Steven Spielberg calls you, and I hope
yes,
that will
yes,
be.
Yes, we wrote that at the same time.
At the same time. great yeah. minds think alike.
Definitely.
E quindi insomma questo per dirvi che lui ci teneva veramente a venire, non è una stupidaggine che David Nicol è arrabbiatissimo perché lui è quello e David no, e che lo ringraziamo tantissimo. Grazie Peter.
Grazie. Ci vediamo.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache dalla galassia. Da un'idea originale di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafini, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof. Massimo De Santo e la partecipazione straordinaria di Elisa Elena Carollo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica, scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificast.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificast.it. Se volete potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal o Patreon utilizzando gli appositi pulsanti sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale, non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Autorizzazione SIAE 56125359. Nessun byte e nessun trivolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. L'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augura lunga vita e prosperità e vi dà appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Allarme rosso, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberate l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigate.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì. Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
85%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 posizionato.
Un'energia terribile.